Okay, shall we begin? Shall we begin? Is that on enough? Can you hear? Is it loud enough? Can you hear? Is that on?
I hope so.
Can you turn it up a little? There you go. That's better. Next Tuesday, we have test number two. Last class period, you got the essay questions for test number two. So you should be preparing those. Gorgeous weather, great time for going out and evaluating things like sun. It ought to be pleasant to look at those. I want to tell you a little bit how I would suggest you study for the book. The format of the test is exactly the same as the last test. There's slide identification. It'll be the same business as it was last time. You'll have a sheet that has all the architects, all the names of architects, and you just have to match that to the image on the screen. So that ought to be, you know how to study for that at this point. Then there will be a second portion of it that will be multiple choice, and 5 of those 10 questions will be on the book, and 5 of those 10 questions will be on the lecture material. At this point, you ought to have a good sense of what you take notes on and what's going to be, so hopefully the lecture material is pretty clear. But this book is a little different than the previous book, so let me give you some tips on what I would be particularly observant of. I would say the biggest thing to look out for is where are there overlaps between the material in class and the material in the book. Most of those questions will come when there's some overlap between the material in class and the material in book. So, for example, in the lecture today, we're going to be looking at passive solar houses. Lisa Hishon was very, very involved in the passive solar home movement, and she's very keen on that. She talks about that. So when she talks about that, you ought to think, oh, yeah, that's those passive solar homes that we saw in class. That's what she's talking about. What does she have to say about that? Likewise, one of the things that we've emphasized in this segment is how physical considerations are so primal, so basic to architecture. Many, many ancient cultures, this was kind of the primary issue. How do I make this freaking building stand up? How do I make it climatically appropriate for my needs in this particular region? We looked at all these ancient Hattusas. We looked at Monte Alban. We looked at Akama Sky City. I mean, all of these are these ancient cultures that are dealing with physical considerations. She's also very keen on that, and she looks at Anasazi Indian dwellings and things like that. So, I mean, when she starts to talk about that, and we talked about the same thing in class, good possibility for a test question. Another example is that she is very keen on the way that climate shapes particular building elements. So just like at Sea Ranch, we talked about, there's wind here, so they built a courtyard. The shape of the building had to do with response to climatic forces. She's very keen on things like ingle nooks or gazebos or these elements of architecture that really grow out of something in physical considerations that shapes them. So overlap between lectures and book, very, very important. Another thing is you need to definitely know her general attitude. I definitely don't expect you to agree with her attitude, but you need to know her point of view. In fact, if you agreed with her attitude, you would change the way you live, because very, very few of us in this room live in a way that is consistent with what this book advocates. This book advocates that we sweat, and most of us don't sweat. We try everything we can to avoid sweating. This book actually advocates shivering. It kind of feels good sometimes. It's a good thing for our body to do. It's just natural. It's the way we're meant to be. But for most of us, if we're shivering, we think it's a malady. We must be sick. and we don't take that as a natural thing. I think she's got some really good points there, but I'm not asking you to agree with those points, but I'm asking you to understand her point of view, especially about this notion of temperature variation. Is it really stupid for us to go from our 72-degree house to our 72-degree car to our 72-degree office to our 72-degree movie theater and never, ever have any temperature variation? Is that unnatural? Is that a stupid goal? Or is that exactly the way human beings were meant to be? It's just for all these millennia, they just couldn't get there. And now we can. Hooray! You know, good for us. So suck up that fossil fuel and keep it at 72 degrees. What is her attitude? Not asking you to agree with it, but you should know what her attitude is. She's also very, very keen on climatic devices being kind of visible. She just doesn't like the fact that that thermostat is so invisible and that the temperature has no visual manifestation. And this kind of mysterious way that just things turn at a certain temperature. And she thinks that that's kind of a loss of enrichment in architecture. Again, I'm not asking you to agree. Just, you know, you need to know her point of view on these things. So that's what I would look for in the book, where there are overlaps with class material and what is this woman's point of view. So I want to just take a little bitty poll here at the beginning. You've got four options here. One option is, man, this was a revelation, this book. I get it, and I think I need to make adjustments to my life in reaction to the really good points that she makes in this book. The second option is, I hear her talking. I think those are really good points. I get the logic of all of that, but I ain't doing it. I'm staying just where I am because I don't want to. I don't have to make a logical argument beyond that. I just don't want to. Or the third thing is, you know, I really don't think her points are that good, and I don't see any need to change because I'm just not that convinced. And the fourth option is, this woman is full of shit. She does not know what she's talking about, and I have no interest whatsoever in her point of view. This is craziness. Okay, you got the four options. First option is, really, really good points. I think I need to make some changes. Second option is, really good points, but I ain't changing. The third option is, you know, I get it, and I think there's some reasonable things going there, but not really strong, not powerful. And the fourth one is baloney. Okay, how many people are in the first option? I think I ought to be reacting to this book. Okay, that's good. How many people are in the second option? She got some good points, but I ain't changing. Whoa, kind of overwhelming there. Okay, the third option, I'm not that keen on what she said. It's not that important. Okay, and the final option, this woman's full of shit. Nobody? One or two? Okay. That's good for me to know. Today we are right in the Lisa Hsiong realm. We're talking about climate. And in particular, today we're talking about sun and we're talking about temperature. So this is the piece of the lecture material that is most explicitly in the realm that Lisa Hsiong talks about. And we're going to start today by really just going back to some really rudimentary things about climate, kind of like we did on statics and dynamics and forces moving through materials when we talked about structures. And the weird thing is that, everybody kind of thinks, I know about climate. I know how the sun works. I know about the solar system. I've heard of Galileo, but the truth is we really don't. Most people don't. They don't understand how the sun works. So let's go over that a little bit. Now, if your mommy told you at age 3 that the sun rises in the east, and in the middle of the day, it's right above you, and it sets in the west. And that's how the sun works. Your mama was a liar. And, you know, maybe some days at the equator, that works. But that's not the way the sun works in Austin, Texas. So mostly today we're going to talk about climates that are like Austin, Texas. And so we're going to talk at the beginning here, what is it like in Austin? If we were in Minneapolis, it would be different. If we were in Mexico City, it would be different. But we'll just talk primarily about what it's like at about 30, 32 degree north latitude, which is where we are in Austin. Okay, so in the summertime, that's June 21st, the most extreme summer condition, the sun does not rise in the east. The sun rises 28 degrees north of east. That's a lot. That's like a third of the way over to due north. 28 degrees north of east, it rises, and then it goes through the sky, toward the southern side of the sky, and at noon, it's only 82 degrees above the horizon, not 90 degrees. 82 degrees at the most extreme case in the summertime, 82 degrees above the horizon. And then it goes on and it sets 28 degrees north of west. So late in the afternoon and in the summertime, it's like 9 o'clock at night. It's setting way over there in the northern part of the sky, not due west. Okay, so in the summertime, there's this huge path of the sun. And of course, it takes, you know, rises at 6 o'clock in the morning, doesn't set until 9 o'clock at night. It's a long, long day of the sun moving through this long arc in the sky, 28 degrees north of east, all the way up to 82 degrees above the horizon, and then 28 degrees north of west. In the wintertime, it's totally, totally different. And obviously, the day is much, much, much shorter. It just has this little arc through the sky. And it doesn't get light until, I don't know, 7 o'clock, and then it's dark at 5:30, so it's just a much smaller path through the sky. It starts 28 degrees south of east, and then it moves through the sky, and the highest it gets in the middle of the day is 35 degrees above the horizon. 35 degrees. Your mama told you straight above 90 degrees. Bullshit, mama. 35 degrees above the horizon in the wintertime, December 21st, and then it sets 28 degrees south of west. So a much smaller arc in the sky, and that's why it's freaking cold in the wintertime. Less time for the sun to heat up the earth, and so it's colder. In the summertime, more time for the sun to go all the way through the sky, and it's hotter. But this is so fundamental to architects. This is really, really important. That the sun is in different parts of the sky, different times of year, different times of the day. And we have to understand where the sun is. If we're going to make a building reacting to it, we have to be able to analyze where is the sun and how does it affect the building, different times of the day, different seasons of the year. So for eons, architects have worked with what we call solar angles. And that's basically any time of day, any time of the year, where is the sun? And solar angles are made up of two components. One is the altitude, which is how many degrees above the horizon. So at noon in the wintertime, the altitude of the sun is 35 degrees. At noon in the summertime, the altitude is 82 degrees. And then the other is the azimuth, A-Z-I-M-U-T-H. And the azimuth is the position of the sun relative to the cardinal points, north, south, east, west. So 28 degrees north of east is the azimuth at dawn in the summertime. Due south is the azimuth of the sun at noon in the winter or in the summer. So the combination of the altitude and the azimuth, we can say at, you know, at 12:45 on October 26th, what is the altitude and the azimuth of the sun, and we can find that precisely, and we can know how to respond to that in the building. So very important to understand this whole notion of the path of the sun. Then how do we deal with that in terms of buildings? And there are really three ways we deal with that. One is we deal with it by the massing of the building. That is the general shape of the building. We want, in this climate, we want to keep as little sun hitting the building and creating heat gain in the summertime as possible. And we want a little bit of heat gain in the wintertime, but we don't want too much even in the wintertime. So if we were in Minneapolis, it would be very different. If we were in Mexico City, it would be very different. But in this climate, it's hotter than hell in the summertime. And we want to try to protect the building from the sun. How do we do that with massing? So in general, and these are very broad rules of thumb, in general, you would like for the building to have its long faces north and south and its short faces east and west. Long faces north and south, short faces east and west. Why is that? The face of the building, the facade of it, is going to get heat gain when the sun is low in the sky. When is the sun low in the sky in the winter when we might want some heat gain? It's low in the sky in the south in the winter. So the south face is pretty good to have a long south face where you can get that heat in the winter when you want the heat. Now in the summertime, it's way up tall. So it's not low in the sky in the summertime. So you can get it on the south face in the wintertime when you want it, and there's less of it in the south face in the summertime because the sun's high in the sky then. Likewise, on the east and the west parts of the building, you want to minimize that heat gain in the summertime. And in the summertime, the sun is low in the sky all morning long, and even worse, it's low in the sky all afternoon long. And so you want the minimum amount of exposure to that hot, low summer sun. And that's morning and afternoon sun. It's east and west sun. So ideally, you want long faces north and south because the south can get good heat gain when the sun is low in the wintertime. The north is irrelevant. There's not much sun then anyway. A little bit in the morning and in the afternoon, but it's not very hot at that period of time. So long face north and south is good. Short face east and west because you do not want a long part of your building facing that hot summer sun when it's low in the sky all afternoon in the summertime. So you understand that? Does that make sense? Long faces north and south, short faces east and west. Now in terms of height, which is another element of massing, you do not want a real pancake building. Pancakes are not good because that's lots and lots of roof and the sun is high in the sky in the summertime when we don't want that heat gain. And it just pours down on top of all that roof, and that can give you an inordinate amount of heat gain. So you want a little bit of height, not one-story huge footprint. You want some height in the building. And in general, a building that has a good massing has long faces north and south, short faces east and west, and the height is about equal to the width. I'm not saying do that over and over. And you know, you can make a wiggly building, but the proportions of it, doesn't have to be rectilinear, but the proportions of it in general, that's a good massing for a building to respond to this climate. So massing is one thing we can do. A second thing we do to respond to the sun is fenestration. That's just like windows and doors. And again, in very general terms, the very best face for the windows is south. Because again, you can get that heat gain in the wintertime when it's low in the sky in the south. But you keep it out in the summertime because it's not low in the sky, it's high in the sky. And we'll talk a minute about how with solar shading you can benefit that even more. So good to have windows on the south face. Of any of the four faces, the most advantageous face for glass is the south face. The second most advantageous face is the north face. Again, the north, you don't get any offensive heat gain, particularly from the north, but you don't get any benefit either. In the wintertime, it's not going to help you to have windows to the north because there's not any sun in the wintertime coming from the north. You don't get any benefit, but you don't get much detriment when you have windows on the north. The third most advantageous face is east. And yeah, the sun is low in the sky in the summertime, and the sun's going to be pouring in from the east. That's why it's third. It's not so good. But at least it's early in the morning when it's not hotter than hell. So that heat gain it's bad, but it's not as bad as it could be. The fourth, the worst orientation for a window in Austin, Texas is west. And if you've ever lived in a house or lived in a bedroom that has a window that faces due west, you know that for all afternoon in the summertime, the sun's low in the sky, it's pouring in heat gain, and that's exactly the time of day you don't want it. It's got hot all day long. It's like 98 degrees by 2 o'clock. By 4 o'clock, it's 105 degrees. And there's been this accumulation of heat all day, and then the sun is pouring in your damn window in addition to that. That's horrible. You do not want windows facing west. So best orientation for fenestration is south. Second best is north. Third best is east. The very worst is west. Okay, does that make sense? Massing, fenestration. Question? Yeah. Fenestration, F-E-N-E-S-T-R-A-T-I-O-N. Fenestration. F-E-N-E-S-T-R-A-T-I-O-N. Is that right? I'm a visual guy. I got to write it. But anyway, it's something like that. Fenestration. Basically where the windows are. Okay. The third thing we have to deal with. We have massing. We have fenestration. The third thing is solar shading. Solar shading is some accoutrement we put on the building to keep the sun off where we don't want it or let the sun in where we do want it. So you see this thing right here? That is solar shading. There are a bunch of you who carry around, who wear solar shading all the time. This is horizontal solar shading, just like that. And the way horizontal solar shading works, and it works really well facing south, right? Because in the summertime, the sun is high in the sky. The sun's up there. It hits the solar shading, and it doesn't hit my face. It blocks it from hitting my face. In the wintertime, the sun is low in the sky, and it can go under the solar shading and warm up my face. That's horizontal solar shading. If you use it on the south side of the building, it allows the sun in the wintertime. It keeps the sun out in the summertime. Right? Right. Yeah. Okay, so one thing we can do is we can put horizontal solar shading on a building, and especially on the south face, and that can help us even make that south orientation more beneficial for the fenestration by letting the sun in the wintertime, keeping the sun out in the summertime. Another kind of solar shading we frequently use is on the east and west face, and there it's more advantageous to make it vertical because then you're dealing with the sun moving around in the sky this way, and it's low all the time. So the horizontal sun shading can help a little, but the vertical sun shading can at least block it when it's not perpendicular to the solar shading, and it can be very effective in keeping the sun out on the east face or the west face. So we'll be looking at lots of examples of this in a minute, but just in general, horizontal sun shading on the south face, vertical sun shading on the east and west face. Now, I am dumbing this down, really, really dumb, just like I did with the structures. There are many, many more nuances to this. And this is not a hard and fast rule that one should always use for all times. There are ways of compensating back and forth. One thing that's very interesting in Austin, in general, we think of our grid being north, south, east, west, but it's not. It's kinked just a little. And so if you put horizontal solar shading on what we call the south facade, it doesn't do 100% of the job. And in fact, vertical solar shading, if it's oriented a little southwest, that vertical may be better on what we call a south facade than the horizontal is. You have to check it. And nowadays, it's great. You just put it in Revit, you know, software for doing buildings, and it'll do all the solar calculations just like that. You can exactly see, you can just let the sun move around through the sky on October 25th, and it'll tell you exactly where the sun goes in the building. And then you can say, well, you need that solar shading a little deeper, so it will keep it out. And that's really how you design these days. And we've got really good tools for helping us do that. You used to have to do all these freaking calculations, and now it's much easier. So now there's no excuse. Now we really should be using the sun to fine-tune and make our buildings just as precise in reaction to the sun as possible. So let's look at a few examples. And like I said, today we're looking primarily at the climate of Austin, but I'm going to jump down to the southern hemisphere occasionally, because if you're 30 to 32 degrees south latitude, you have exactly the same solar condition as you have when you're in north latitude. So if you look for that latitude around the world, what you hit is Australia. And Australia has a remarkably similar climate to Texas. And the Australian cities, which are all about the same latitude, are a very similar latitude to Austin. So it's a very interesting thing to see, well, how have they dealt with climate in Australia? How do we deal with climate in the United States? So we're going to start with a couple of Australian examples. On the left is a house in Sydney called Vaucluse House. This is a very famous historic home from the middle 19th century in Sydney. And Vaucluse House is really good evidence of these British people coming to settle Australia. They're colonists in Australia in the 19th century. And they're Brits. They come with their preconceptions about what a house ought to be. And if you have a really nice house, you want to have a Tudor house, like a castle, you know, with little crenellation up at the top, big heavy stone walls, no solar shading at all, because you're in freaking England. England is way, way, way up high, northern latitude, and they want sun. Those Brits, they want sun all year round, because basically it's really kind of a cold climate. So they had an architecture that had been built to respond to that climate, to try to, you know, have these very heavy walls and do things that were good in that climate. They bring that architecture to Australia, and you know something? It wasn't working too well. You'd build that castle out of stone, and the sun would bake that thing all day long and heat it up, and you'd fry inside it. So those Brits learned pretty quickly that just like when they went outside in the middle of the day and worked all day in the field, their little pink cheeks turned bright red and they were sunburned terribly. Whereas they could have done that in England just fine, you do that in Australia and you're burned. They start wearing big hats instead. And likewise, they started building buildings, they couldn't build those little simple castle-like buildings. They had to put a porch around it. So this is that funny crenellated castle kind of form with windows that are kind of like castle windows. But the first thing they do is they just slap a porch all the way around it and do some solar shading to the house. So clearly they're understanding how their architecture needs to respond to climate. On the right-hand slide, this is Victoria Barracks, also in Sydney. And this one is long faces north and south, short faces east and west, the height of the building about equal to the width of the building. It's just perfect massing. These dudes are figuring it out. On the long north face, and actually, let me confess something here, okay? In Australia, they're upside down. Everything is upside down in Australia. So everything I just got through saying about the north face, that's like the south face for them. And everything I just got through saying about the south face, that's actually what they call north. But so as not to confuse you and make you crazy in this lecture, I'm going to pretend that they're not upside down in Australia. And I'm going to, what really is north for them, I'm going to call it south. And what really is south for them, I'm going to call it north, because that's parallel to what we are. Everybody got that? I'm lying, but it's going to be better, okay? So that would be the south face of Victoria Barracks. Actually, the north face. But that would be the south face of Victoria Barracks. And you can see that long horizontal sun shading along there in the form of this porch. And I'm taking this picture in December, and the sun is about the lowest, and this is about noon in December. And you can see that that sun is penetrating in, and it's hitting all those windows, and it's putting a little heat gain into all of those rooms along there. In the summertime, the sun would be high in the sky. All of that would be totally in shadow. There would never be one speck of direct sunlight getting inside the building. So that horizontal sun shading, long faces north-south, on that long south face, that horizontal sun shading perfectly controls the sun. Gets just the right amount in the wintertime, keeps it out in the summertime. So the Brits figured out how to deal with that. Here is a more contemporary building in Australia. This one is the Cameron offices in Belconnen, which is just outside of Canberra. Canberra is the capital. This is a federal governmental office building done by John Andrews in 1972. In the 1970s, there was a worldwide shortage of oil, and oil prices spiked. And there began to be a lot more consciousness of designing with climate so that you use less energy. So this was in that spate of buildings in the 1970s that were addressing that. And this office complex is made up of 7 buildings, all of them with long faces north and south, short faces east and west. And in fact, on that west face, there's a big stairwell that pretty much makes it completely blank on the west face. Long faces north and south, short faces east and west, the height about equal to the width. The massing's fantastic on Cameron offices. And then on the north side of the building, which we're seeing here, it's pretty much just glass. There is no horizontal sun shading on the north face. Why would you? You don't get much light on the northern part of the sky, so it's just pretty much flush glass on that side. On the south face, on the other hand, there's long horizontal sun shading here that's allowing the sun to penetrate when the sun is low in the wintertime, but keeping the sun out when it's high in the summertime. The fenestration is pretty much all on the north and south face, tons of it on the south face, a lot here on the north face. As I mentioned, on the west face there, almost no fenestration, big blank there. And on the east face, also virtually no fenestration. So they've followed the massing perfectly. They followed the fenestration perfectly. There also is this amazing solar shading, really, really good solar shading, not only on the south side of the building, as we see that with these sort of porches here with long horizontal sunshades, but also between the buildings, there are these big beams. And we're standing on the west side of the building here, and that low sun, when it is in the western sky in the summertime, all of those beams catch that sun, and in the courtyard down there, it's shady. So you get a little shady courtyard between the buildings because of the solar shading. If you didn't have those there, the sun would be streaming in from the west, and that would be full of hot afternoon sun. And then in that shaded courtyard, then he puts a little water feature. So there's some nice cooling water with evaporative cooling happening there, and that's also cooling down that courtyard even more. And what the result is that in that courtyard, let's say it's 100 degrees outside in the summertime, and it would be just like it is here, but in that courtyard, it's probably about 85 degrees in there, because it's got all this shading happening, both from the building and from the solar shading here. And that means that your air conditioner is trying to keep it 72 degrees inside the building, but it's only fighting 85 degrees outside the building. It's like we changed it from August to April, because the hottest it's ever going to get in that courtyard is 85 degrees. So your air conditioner is just working against 85 degree air instead of 100 degree air. Now that's big time energy savings. And we didn't do anything, no mechanical equipment here at all. We got that benefit just from the massing, the fenestration, the solar shading. All of those things working together can save an enormous amount of energy. So that's a really, really good example of just following all those things we were talking about to the T. Now, in Texas, we have very much the same situation. We also had people who came as settlers from Europe, or a lot from the east coast of the United States, where the weather was colder. They came down to Texas, and the first thing they did was also to slap a porch on that south face, put that sun shading on the south face. This is the Ball House in Galveston that we're seeing right here. But it's just exactly like the neighbor and the neighbor and the neighbor and the neighbor. And all of them have that porch with its horizontal sun shading right here on the south side of the building. On this one, it's a screened-in porch at the top. It's an open porch at the bottom. And there again, it's doing that same microclimate thing that we were looking at in Cameron offices. So now those windows, on the inside, if you wanted 72 degrees, it's already going to be maybe 85 or maybe 90 degrees out here. Because it's shady all the time in there, and it creates a microclimate. That also is then the place where you can hang out. You know, you can actually sit out on the porch, you know, sip your mint julep, have a conversation, and then, just like Lisa Hishong makes the point, those solar devices become other things. It's the coolest place to be. You catch every breeze in the summertime, so you start sitting out there, and then your neighbor also sits out there. And so you start chit-chatting with your neighbor, and this is how it generates not just a reaction to necessity, but now it begins to engender affection. And we think of the porch as this friendly, community-oriented kind of thing. But it began as a solar device, and it's really managing the sun. Here in Austin, we can see any number of beautiful houses from the 19th century, early 20th century, before air conditioning, where you look at the architecture and you say, oh, that is such a beautiful house. I love those old Greek Revival houses. And you say, I love those porches. I want a porch on my house. That's so pretty. But in fact, that's a solar device we're talking about there. This is the Eugene Bremond house down on 7th Street downtown. And all across the south face is this deep porch, screened in on this side, open on this side. All of that is a solar device to shade the south side of the building there. It's doing exactly what we've been talking about. Just down the street, that one was built in the 1860s or so. Down the street a little bit is the John Bremond House. This one was built in the 1890s. That one, the Eugene Bremond House, is a Greek Revival house. This one is a Victorian house. This one is doing exactly the same thing thermally. Doesn't matter what the style of it is, it's behaving in reaction to the climate in the same way. So all along the south face of the building, we get this big double-decker porch. Here we're getting it on the east face as well, because they're actually orienting to the breeze. The prevalent breeze in Austin is from the southeast. This is kind of on a hill on 7th Street. The breeze would come off the Colorado River. We'd get cooled from the Colorado River. And then it would come up from the southeast to the house. And so you have that nice big porch on both levels that would catch every bit of that breeze. You have that great solar shading on the south that would keep the sun off of your windows in the summertime, but allow a little bit of heat gain in the wintertime. This also has a thermal chimney effect, so that when that breeze comes in those windows, and they're huge, tall windows, then it, as the heat rises, as it gets hotter, over the stairwell there's a thermal chimney and a ventilator so that then that hot air can exhaust out and it draws more breeze through the house. So this house that we look at and say, you know, I love those porches. This reminds me of New Orleans. And I love all that wrought iron. I love those porches. They're so pretty. But in fact, that is a solar device. And they invented those porches because they were very effective solar devices. Now, occasionally these days, you see a big old porch like that on the north side of a building, or big old columns and, you know, big deal porch on the north side of the building, and it's supposed to look like a great old antebellum mansion. But that's dumbass stupid. I mean, they knew what they were doing back then. They had a purpose for that. Now we just slap it on and we think it's the same. It's not the same. It's not authentic. It's not doing a job. So, just to make the point, just like in Australia, the old buildings responded to climate. The new buildings, Cameron offices, responded to climate. This is a building in downtown Houston, the Tenneco building. And it is responding very effectively to climate. So it's a steel and glass office building done in 1963 by very famous Chicago architects, SOM. But you can see that the glass is not at the face of the building. All of the glass is set back considerably from the face of the building, about 5 feet. So on all four sides of the building, the glass is set back about 5 feet. That means that we've got very effective solar shading on the south side, which we've been talking about. You do have some vertical solar shading on the west side, and it's helping some there too. But really what it's doing substantially is creating this microclimate, a cooler zone all the way around the building on all four sides, so that the sun can't shine in those windows. And so that there is just, you know, and here it's not as effective as, let's say, Cameron offices, but if it's 100 degrees outside here, it's probably only 95 degrees in here. Even if there's a little sun shining in, it's still a little cooler there than it would be if that 100 degree sun was shining right on the glass. So again, your air conditioner is only having to cool against 95 degrees instead of 100 degrees. And there again, it's a saving. Okay, the whole idea here is how do we design buildings, their massing, their fenestration, their solar shading, so that without any mechanical device, you're going at least partway to making that building comfortable, all by itself, with no mechanical systems, no energy consumption. So we're going to look at a few buildings here that Le Corbusier designed in India. And he was given a commission in the 1960s to design a whole city in India. And the city is called Chandigarh. And it was originally conceived to be the capital of two states. Very unusual notion. So the state of Punjab and the state of Haryana both needed a new capital city. And they didn't feel like they had the money to build a badass new capital for Punjab and another one for Haryana. So they said, okay, we're just going to do one new capital city. It's going to be at the border between the two states. And it will be the capital for both Punjab and Haryana. So that's what Chandigarh is. And it was a start from scratch, brand new capital city. Le Corbusier did all the planning for Chandigarh. And then he probably did 15 buildings in the city. On the left, this is a kind of country club that he did. And on the right, this is one of the three major governmental buildings that we're going to look at in some detail. But you can see even in this country club building that it's all about dealing with the sun. Le Corbusier is from Switzerland, you know, and France. Fairly northern climates, not much sun. Always worried about getting more sun. Heat is good. But now he comes to India and he can tell, you know, really quickly, okay, it's hotter than hell here. I've got to worry about keeping the sun out. And in that little country club, it's built around a courtyard. That's a common thing to do in a hot climate. It's very effective, just as we saw in the case of the Cameron offices. And then everything's set back, so we have the solar shading and the deep shade. So the architecture, even in these modest little buildings he's doing, it's coming from a consideration of the sun. But in these three major buildings, the architecture is really substantially about the sun. So one thing in Chandigarh that was a little problematic is that when he did the whole plan for the city, the grid of the city is not north, south, east, west. And the reason for that is because the foothills of the Himalayas run right by this site. And so he aligned the grid of the city with the line of the Himalayas. And that's such a dominant visual thing in that whole region that that makes some good sense. So the grid of the city is not north, south, east, west. It actually is about 45 degrees off. So the faces of the blocks are northeast and southwest and northwest and southeast instead of north, south, east, west. So that gives you a, you can't use those simplistic rules that I was talking about. And now you know those well. You know what that would do for a building. But now let's look, okay, we've got a little more nuanced situation where we're not going north, south, east, west, but the faces are at a 45 degree angle. So this is what's called the Secretariat Building. This one is basically where the bureaucracy government is. And it's a huge building with hundreds and hundreds of people that work there. So he is, and you can see the Himalayas running there. And so the building is perpendicular to the Himalayas. So we see it aligning with a larger landscape. But the faces are now, this is southeast and southwest. The long faces are southeast and northwest, and the short faces are southwest and northeast. And the prime thing there is southwest, where that killer sun is, late in the afternoon on a summer day, that's the short face. So it's intelligent massing in terms of optimizing thermal performance. So long faces, southeast and northwest. Short faces, southwest and northeast. So there's that short northeast face there. Okay, then in terms of fenestration, again, the long faces are getting pretty much all the fenestration. The short faces, especially the southeast face there, virtually no windows whatsoever. So again, following those good climatic rules. And then the architecture of the building is really about sunshades. And he actually articulates where there's a cluster here of conference rooms and sort of bigger rooms and shared spaces. The sunshading is one way. When it's just a bunch of offices, the sunshading is another way. You can see the repetitive nature of the offices with that repetitive sunshading. And then these particular different spaces getting a different kind of sunshading. And so visually, the building is being a representation of the solar need for different functions inside the building. And basically, there is this concrete brisole, spelled B-R-I-S-E, new word S-O-L-I-E-L. Brisole is basically, that means sunshade in French, because Le Corbusier spoke French. So this brisole is a very important part of the architecture of the building. And it is a concrete brisole on the outside, and then about 4 or 5 feet away, there is the glass wall, and it's actually steel mullions and glass windows that are on the other side. And in between is this little bit of space, not so different from what we saw in the Tenneco building. And then every chance he gets, like the lobby of the Secretariat, it's just completely open air. Just let the breeze go through there. It's oriented properly for the breeze, and then give a little shade and let it be an open air lobby. Now, this building was not air conditioned initially because India's a relatively poor country, and in Punjab and Haryana, they couldn't afford air conditioning in these buildings. So the building had to cool itself naturally, passively, with the architecture, and it did it quite effectively. Okay, that's the Secretariat Building. The second building he built in this Capitol complex is the High Court Building, the Palace of Justice. This is where the Supreme Court would meet. And Le Corbusier had been walking around looking at Indian people and see how they inhabit this very sunny climate. And one of the things he noticed all over the place was people using parasols. We would call them umbrellas, but in many parts of the world you call them parasols. And parasol actually means for the sun. Para, for Saul, sun. They're really devices to keep the sun off. So when we use an umbrella, we're using it to keep the rain off usually. But smart people in hot climates go around with parasols to keep the sun off. Americans, we don't get it. But most hot climates like China or Vietnam or India, they carry around some solar shading with them, and they call it a parasol. So how many people have been to a place like, I can remember going to the Shanghai, what was a big World's Fair several years ago, and most, by far, like 95% of the people who went to the Shanghai Fair were Chinese. And it was hotter than hell. Shanghai is a very hot city, and it was in the summertime. And I would say 98% of the people there had a parasol. All of the women and most of the men. And it was just us dumbass Americans and Europeans that were sitting there frying because we didn't carry around our portable solar shading, our parasols. So how many of you have seen that in one of those countries? It's just really, really super common. So Le Corbusier looks around in India and he sees these people with their parasols. So he said, well, what if we made the building have a parasol over it? And so that's what this is. So that there is a sunshade on the top of the building, which of course in the summertime when the sun is high in the sky, you're getting enormous heat gain from the top. So you put that parasol on the top and then it protects the building down below. And the sun hits on here and it heats it up and then the breeze goes through here and flushes it out, which is the same thing that happens with the parasol, that you get all of the breeze, but you keep off the sun. And that's what that looks like in section. It also gathers the water, because it's a fairly arid climate, collects the water so you can use it for other purposes, lets the breeze go through there. There's actually a little habitable garden up on the top of the building, and then the building down below right there. Again, totally a response to the climate. And then there is also sun shading on the north and south. Actually, this is southeast and northwest, long faces of the building. The short faces of the building are the southwest and northeast, and they're, again, totally solid. But where there is those long faces that get the sun, then there's brise-soleil on them, horizontal and vertical, just like we saw on the Secretariat building. This is very clever here, where the big shade up there, it catches the sun and creates shadow up to a certain point. And then that angle right there is when the big shade stops and the other smaller shade takes over. And it actually is the sun angle right there that makes that curved surface. And then there are big pools in front of the building, and that's so the breeze comes along, it gets cooled by the water, and then it moves in through those brise-soleil and in to cool the court rooms that are inside the building. Then on the other side of the building, this nice long walkway is in that space between the brise-soleil and the glass wall here, so it's used functionally as a passageway, as well as that microclimate that makes it cooler here so you don't have to condition against so much temperature differential. So again, it's architecture made substantially out of climate response. And even the lobby in this case, the grand space you go into going into the building is not an interior room. It's an exterior room so you can take full advantage of the breezes. Okay, the third building in this Capitol complex is the Assembly Building. And this is like what we would call our Capitol Building. It's where the legislature meets and where all the big decisions are made. And again, remember, we're at a 45-degree angle. So the front of that building is southeast. And we've got these deep, deep, deep horizontal vertical sunshades and this long horizontal sunshade. And it creates a big, deep porch, a nice, shady porch on the entry to the building. And this is where ceremonies are often held, in that deep, shady, cool porch at the front of the building. And it's got horizontal sunshading for the south part of the southeast orientation. And it's got vertical sunshading for the east part of that southeast orientation. So it's got both horizontal and vertical because it's not purely south or purely east. And there you can see here we're looking directly from the east side. So when the sun comes up, all of those vertical sunshades would block it. And the horizontal shade, as it moves around and into the south part of the sky, it would block it there as well. Now, this slide is looking from south to north. And I want you to pay particular attention to this face. So this is the southeast face. This is the southwest face. And because it's really the same device, there's horizontal and vertical sunshade to the southeast. But in this case, it's the front of the building, and we have to have ceremonies, and the scale is bigger. In this case, it's offices over here. And so the scale is smaller, but we still have horizontal and vertical sunshading on that side. So southwest and southeast need horizontal and vertical sunshading. Then up here you can see there are two big assembly rooms inside where the legislature meets. This one is for Punjab, which is the larger state. This one is for Haryana, which is the smaller state. The big dome-like shape here for Punjab actually faces due south. He slices off that form facing due south. So, like I said, we're south looking north here, and that's sliced off. And then at the top of it, he actually tracks exactly the movement of the sun in the summertime at the summer solstice and in the wintertime at the winter solstice. So that's that short path through the sky. That's the long path through the sky. And the light as it shines down on that dome tracks the movement of the sun through the seasons of the year. So that kind of artistic moment of the building is also tied to the climate. Everywhere, everything's about solar shading. Maybe different shapes or whatever, but there's always a concern for how he's dealing with the sun. Now, this face, which I told you was where offices are, and that's the southwest face of the building right here. This one is like a watch. It is so precision. This is a beautiful bit of good solar design. So in this slide, we're looking directly from the west. And as you can see, everything is solid. No west light can penetrate this building at all. Zero. These fins are directly north-south. They're the fins right here. And they're going from south to north. So that south orientation has the horizontal sunshading that keeps the sun from penetrating too deep in there. And then the vertical sunshading is against the west so that none of that west sun goes in. But still, when you're in the office there, you have 100% glass view, but now out to the south and not to the west. Now, this is a little bit hard to explain, but Jesus, this is beautiful. You're sitting in that office. You've got 100% glass there facing to the south. Although the face of the building is facing southwest, you get none of that west sun, zero. Of the south sun, you get a little bit of low sun in the wintertime when you might want it, but it's totally blocked out in the summertime when you don't want it. You've got totally floor-to-ceiling glass, wall-to-wall, and yet you don't have any direct sun penetration in this very, very hot climate. And in addition, you have this little microclimate just outside your window, which never gets to be terribly hot because it's shady there all the time. There you can see from the west face down below, you can see the golden light of the sunset, and yet where that hot sun is there low in the sky, zero sun penetration. But over here from the north, they get good indirect light into the building, but none of that bad west sun. Now, all of this is just every single building. If we built every building to be as conscious of the sun as these buildings, somewhere between 30 and 40% of the energy use of the building can be cut just by good building design. Not the mechanical systems, not the quality of the glass in the windows, not how much tint is in them. Just take all that, not insulation, just by the massing, the fenestration and the solar shading, you can cut 30 to 40% out of the energy consumption of the building because you just made it smart as regards the sun. Now, I told you that we would be talking today about these passive solar houses. These were houses that, especially in the, 70s, in that first energy crisis, there were a lot of people who were saying, well, let's save that energy. Let's figure out a way to make the sun do the job for us and the building do the job for us and not have to worry about fossil fuel. So you got all these buildings, a lot of them in New Mexico and Arizona, where that climate is very good for solar performance, and you get these series of solar homes. So what you have here is one example of that, and I'm going to say there are a number of different things they used routinely. So one thing they use routinely is orientation. So you can see those facing south very, very overtly. And now we're actually in these areas. Sometimes they're high altitude. They're not so hot in the summertime. These are around like Santa Fe, Taos, places like that. So they're cold in the wintertime. They're trying to get all of that winter sun they possibly can. They are blocking the summer sun, but it's not as stringent as it is here, so we get that very strong south orientation to get all of that winter sun in there and to try to heat that whole place. It's a sunny climate, and in the wintertime it might be 0 degrees outside, but it might be sunny. So let the sun come in and warm my house, and then I don't have to use any other power source to do that. But then in the summertime I have enough sunshade so that it blocks that window, and I don't get that solar gain then. So one thing is certainly orientation. And you can see in these buildings radical south orientation. All the glass on the south, very little on the east or on the west. All that glass on the south. So orientation's a big deal in the passive solar homes. Another important factor is sunshading. So in this case, those south-facing windows, but with horizontal sunshading to mitigate that so you don't get it in the summertime. And it's not hot there like it is here, but it still gets to be 90 degrees. And so there's some solar shading for that. So one big issue is orientation. A second big issue is solar shading. A third big issue is thermal mass. And this is something that I think is underutilized all over the United States. It's something ancient cultures knew a ton about, but we've kind of forgotten about. But in this case, this is a place where there's a south-facing window. The sun comes in like that, and there are all these glass tubes filled with water. And what happens is the sun comes in, it shines through that glass tube, and it heats up the water. And water is a high-mass material. It's heavy. And when the sun shines on a high-mass material, that mass soaks in the heat. And so that water is being heated naturally by the sun all day long. And then at night, that heat re-radiates back into the room and it keeps it warm all night long. So you store the heat from the day and you radiate it back at night. But in order to do that, you need a high mass material like water. But there are other materials. In this case, here are some 55-gallon drums that are filled with oil, and they're painted black. The black absorbs the heat. The oil is very high mass material. It stores that heat, and then in this case, it re-radiates it back into the building at night. Here is actually a solar collector, so that you run water through this south-facing area here in tubes. Those tubes get the water gets really hot in those tubes, and then you take it down and run those tubes through a bunch of rocks down here, and the heat transfers into the rocks. The rocks are high mass. They store the heat. The water goes back up, gets hot again, recirculates back, stores up the heat in the rock down here, and then at night you actually use a small fan to blow the heat into the rest of the house. So it stored the heat with high thermal mass, in that case, oil or rocks, and then either re-radiates it back or maybe even blows it back as a heat source at night. So, orientation, solar shading, high thermal mass. A fourth thing is insulation. In this case, this wacky house where they're actually using the ground as insulation here, because dirt is good insulation. In this case, we've got a big window, which during the day may be giving us good heat gain of the sun in the wintertime. But at night, it may leak out through that glass. So instead, we put insulating panels on that glass so that we can close it down at night and keep the heat from escaping. So insulation's another element. A fifth and final element in some of these solar homes is air movement. So in this case, we have air coming in, cooler air coming in, rising through the house and exhausting out the top. In this case, we have what's called a tromwall. This is a really interesting thing where there's glass on the outside. About a foot behind that glass is a big old concrete wall. That big old concrete wall is painted black. So the sun goes through the glass. It hits on the black surface, which is right there. So then it heats up this area, that foot between the glass and the concrete wall, heats up super hot, like a greenhouse, more, just super hot there. And of course, hot air rises, so it moves up here and it moves into the room. And then as it cools off, it goes down, and then the cool air goes back in here and recirculates to get heated up again and into the room and down and reheated, and so that it actually is a heater. And in this one's in Princeton, New Jersey, a northern climate in the wintertime. You don't have to turn on any kind of mechanical device. It's moving the air, constantly heating it, distributing that heat to the rest of the house, and then recirculating it again. It's called a tromwall. That I've been in that house. You put your hand up here and you think, oh, that's the heater blowing the air. No, no mechanical device whatsoever. It's all nature that's doing that and sending the air through the house. Now, I'm going to tell you, I think all of these solar homes that I've been showing you are butt ugly. They are not good looking. But that is not essential. And I think initially they were very didactic and they were a little ugly, but in fact, those same principles can make absolutely beautiful, beautiful homes as well. Now, I just want to make the point that this has been going on a long time. And Lisa Hishong makes this point too. This is Mesa Verde. This was Anasazi Indians in northern New Mexico way back 10th to 13th century. But you know, they found a site which was south-facing, had a big overhang right here. So they had that solar shading right there on the south face, horizontal solar shading. They have high thermal mass, so it heats up during the day, re-radiates at night. All of these principles have been around and in rather primitive cultures for years because they didn't have a mechanical device to do it, so they used natural devices for doing it. A number of years ago when I was teaching in Australia, the students in the School of Architecture made what they called the autonomous house. And autonomous meaning independent, not depending on anything. It was made of totally refuse. They did not pay $1 for anything. That was the ethic. Everything had to be recycled. It had to be trash from somewhere else. There's another one that's not beautiful, but it is long faces north and south, short faces east and west, about as tall as it is wide. All the fenestration here on the south side. It has all that passive solar, everything that we've been talking about. This is that high thermal mass, which is created by beer bottles. The students in Australia drink like fish. And so they take all those beer bottles, they fill them back up with water and seal them again. And then they put them like they were bricks in a wall, and that's catching the sun, high thermal mass, and in this case, it's an outdoor shower. So you get up in the morning, all morning it's been, get up in the morning, I'm saying 10 or 11 o'clock, these guys are not too vigorous, but all morning it's been shining on there and heating up those bottles, and then when you get in that shower, even if it's chilly outside, It's toasty warm in the shower right there. All done. Passive solar principles. I lived for a week in the autonomous house just to see what it feels like. You know, it's got a very good Lisa Hsiong feel. It feels natural and authentic. And, okay, it's a little warmer at 4 o'clock in the afternoon than it is at midnight, but beautiful ventilation, lots of really nice sunny places to be sometimes of the day, shady places to be at other times of the day. I'm going to shut down there and give you your Twitter card question, which is very simple. Twitter card question, you've got four options. I want to know how important all this thermal stuff is to you. So option number one is, 10 years from now, when I buy my own house, this is going to be the top priority for me. I'm going to get a really badass, great, thermal, passive performing house. This is the top priority. Second choice is, 10 years from now when I buy a house, this is going to be one of the top priorities. It's not the top priority, but it's going to be an important thing, one of the top priorities. The third option is, I'll think about this, but it's not going to be particularly a priority. And the fourth option is, I don't care. I'm just going to buy me a cool house, and I don't care how it performs thermally. Okay, option number one is, it is the top priority. Option number two is, it is one of several top priorities. Option number three is, I'll think about it, but it's not going to be a priority. And the fourth option is, it's just not important to me. Because honestly, at the end of the day, this class is about, you know, what do you think? How's this going to make a difference in your life? This could make a big difference in your energy bill. Is that important to you or is that not important to you? This could make a big difference in maybe the comfort level or the uniformity of temperature in your life. Is that a big deal or is that not a big deal? What do you think?